Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Norm.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Zach.
Zach Redding. Zach Redding, how are you, sir?
I'm excellent. Thanks for having me.
For those of you who might not know Zach, we go way back,
it turns out.
But very recently, earlier this year, Zach helped me by designing an incredible laser tag system for World War I airplanes so I could go to New Zealand, fly in Peter Jackson's airplanes, and experience a real dogfight.
It is now my go-to of what do you do? I explain that, and that is, you know, my explanation. So, yeah, no, it was so much fun.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I don't want to oversell you, but I will say...
Please do.
Because I don't know if it'll do you any favors. Your rig worked out of the box on the first try subsequent try.
You've now jinxed every project I'm going to take on from now
on. I told you, I didn't want to oversell it. But I've never seen that happen. It's such a complex engineering thing. Oh, and also, we were attaching these sensors to priceless planes made out of wood and canvas.
It was one of the scariest things I've done, because if we did it wrong, bad things could have happened.
The stakes felt crazy high, but there was also this lovely dance while we were doing that with the guys on the ground there at the Hood Aerodrome who work on the planes, because at first they were like, eh, and then by the end of the week they were like, yeah, go ahead and put that over there, we trust you.
Yeah, no, it was great to go that transition between like, what are these guys doing to our planes, to, oh my gosh, this is so much fun.
It was something I got to experience on Mythbusters a whole bunch, and I would guess you and your career have also experienced, is that switch over from distrust to trust from a fellow engineer.
It's yeah, you have to prove your competence. I mean, every time you walk in a room, there's a little bit of just moments of like, oh, okay, this person knows what they're doing. And we all do it.
Yeah.
I mean, just we listen to the way people answer questions and talk and whatever. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, we are. You are here because we're talking about some exciting future tested projects.
Yes, yeah. Exciting. Well, we're talking off camera about exciting future
yes,
tested projects. Sorry for podcast listeners.
Terrible tease.
I know. It's all behind the camera, literally right there. But we're also, this is Thanksgiving week, and a lot of people are traveling. And we just came back from some travels. I want to talk about some of that. Adam, you were gone almost all of last week in Toronto.
I was. I visited. The main visit was to the set of The Expanse, which is just a month in for shooting season 5.
Wow.
Season 4 airs on December 13th Amazon Prime.
Thanks, Amazon.
Thank you, Amazon. Thank you for keeping one of the best shows on television up and running. I'll tell you, the first time I visited was at the end of season 2. I famously get killed at the end of season 2 in the atmosphere of Venus. But there's easily twice as many sets now as there were in season 2. I mean, not only twice as many sets, but I got lost on a set. I got lost in Fred Johnson's office with all the attached spaceship parts. I like couldn't find my way out for a second, like, which was
you're not talking
awesome.
About in the soundstage. You got lost in a set.
I got lost in a set in soundstage for a minute because I couldn't figure out which way was out. And I mean, look, I got to interview the actors. I got to interview a bunch of Stephen Strait, Dominique Tipper, and Wes Chatham, and they agreed. The more set you have around you, the easier it makes your job as an actor.
It becomes real.
And I mean, there's this one curved hallway, which I couldn't post a picture of, but that like you could stand in the middle and can't see either end.
Well, that was one of the cool things when we were in Sydney to cover Alien Covenant, and they had, you know, the ship, the Covenant there. They had one hallway, and they said they repurposed that hallway for like 4 different parts of the ship. And they do that a lot, just like lighting it differently, shooting it down behind this door, that door.
Put some extra smoke in, and it's a whole new place.
Well, and actually, when we were in Covenant, there was a hallway. We saw a model of it first out of foam core. And I think it was probably 1/24 scale, and it was about this long. And I was like, well, there's no way they built the actual set. Yeah, they did. Not only did they build the actual set that long, but they had mirrors at the end so that it looked like a 300-foot-long hallway in there. And I mentioned visiting the Covenant set several times to the set deck team on The Expanse because they're having so much fun. The amount of iteration, they're carving up old sets to make new ones. They're repurposing, they're storing,
they're kit bashing.
They're kit bashing. Kit bashing large set. Like they pulled the Rocinante and put it in storage and then pulled it back out and reassembled it.
Oh my God. And at the same time, because they have so many locations, whether it's spaceships, space station, Earth, right? Graphics teams are working nonstop to create all the kind of signage and labels.
And we got to talk to their graphics department. We talked to their props department, who had these videos are going to come up quite soon. The props department had some beautiful things to show specifically to help out Expanse cosplayers.
That's nice.
They know what side their bread is buttered on. I also, while we were there in Toronto, I reached out to the people I know in Toronto, and among them was my friend Matt Berry, who I built a truncheon for last year for his show Year of the Rabbit on the BBC. I think it comes to IFC this month here in the States. And Matt is one of the vampires in What We Do in the Shadows.
Hilarious.
So we visited that set, which is amazing. Paul Sims is the showrunner. He was the creator of one of my favorite old sitcoms, News Radio.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the showrunner of this. And we got to sit and watch them for a whole afternoon workshop a scene where vampires are screaming at each other.
So I had a question about that because Taika Waititi directed and wrote the original New Zealand picture, What We Do in the Shadows, which everyone should watch. It's a mockumentary about different era vampires living together. And this FFX U.S. adaptation of it takes a lot of the storylines, but of course it's set in America. How is, are they on script? Like, are they line by line or is it improv?
It's a little of both. Okay. It's a little of both. I mean, the entire cast is a bunch of really highly excellent improv actors. So they have a script and we were looking at the sides there. And then after they've got the script down, they just go off and try a bunch of different things. Yeah. And that, I mean, that was very fun. It was like, you know, you got to watch multiple iterations of the same joke. You got to watch them kind of find timings with each other. It was being directed by one of the two guys from the Flight of the Conchords.
Tremaine.
Yeah, the one who played the villain in
Men in Black 3.
I think that's Tremaine.
I think so.
Okay.
Clement, yeah.
It was a lovely set. Again, we visited a lot of sets on Tested, and a movie set is a high pressure place full of people who are busting their ass to do their best work, and it's always really exciting. I have rarely visited a set that is as much of a family as The Expanse. What We Do in the Shadows felt similar, and actually when they brought us over to sit down in Video Village and watch the takes, they were like, you can sit here, and I look at the name on the chair, it's Bob Monroe, my friend who was the effects director for The Expanse when we were there for season 2. Bob actually directed my death, and now he's working on Shadows.
It's the Toronto film community.
So I just texted him and was like, I'm on your set. He was like, who is this?
That's amazing. Wow.
A super productive visit. Really, really lovely. What they're doing for the Expanse universe in season 4 is going to be really exciting. I only know one little thing about season 5 and it's blowing my mind. Again, that's a tease, and I have to do that. I cannot wait for season 4. They have some big, big location shifts in season 4. As you can see on the trailer, there's a whole bunch that takes place on the surface of an Earth-like planet. And I find myself thinking, even though I haven't seen any of the episodes yet, that this is going to be a little like New Caprica during Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
Right? Remember how destabilizing it was to all of a sudden be on a planet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And all the resulting things that came about because of that. I think they're going
more space battles for a moment.
Right.
Well, you saw the problem having to do a lot of zero G also.
The actors also talked about the fact that it was filmed in December and January in Toronto in a rock quarry.
Oh, man.
Which is brutal. Nice.
Well, if you want that alien planet atmosphere, sure.
Yeah. A terrific visit all around. And I mean, that's just like a big extended family for me. So getting to see everyone was delightful. You were just at DesignerCon.
I was. It was this past weekend. Said hello to many friends of Tested. Our friend Mark Dubow was there. Melissa Eng was there. A lot of the people that we've interviewed before at Comic-Con. It felt like my favorite parts of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Like none of the movie studio stuff. You know, the comic stuff, it's all the makers, all artists, independent artists who are now making some, like, not only like 3D printing and casting and selling their stuff, but also working with production factories. Like, it's very possible now, if you are a graphic artist, but 2D artist or 3D artist, to have whatever character you design be a physical product.
Oh yeah, now it's a service.
Rapid prototyping has now become rapid manufacturing.
Absolutely.
And the world is better for it.
It is, absolutely.
And the best parts were artists finding each other and connecting, right? So like one artist would be, I just sell prints and I just do this stylized type of character, but I met this other artist who does clothing at this scale and now I'm going to do 6-scale figures.
It's a networking event for makers.
Yeah, it is.
It's delightful. That sounds
perfect.
Amazing.
Timing for people buying stuff, shopping for the holidays, shot a bunch of videos, and they'll all be online in the next couple of weeks.
Were you able to, did you obtain any really cool figures?
I got kits? a couple stuff. No kits. I was there for one day, and some of that stuff I'll be showcasing later, doing videos on them.
Nice.
Yeah, but saw friends like Jason Freeman was there. A lot of artists I admire from afar also just got a chance to. Oh, my favorite is, I know you're not a big Disney guy, Adam, but when I used to go to Disneyland, and when people still go to Disneyland, like one of the big souvenirs you can buy are these miniatures of like the areas of Disneyland.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And there's this one guy who was an artist, or I always thought of it more like the Franklin Mint type thing, mm-hmm. you know, like this company that just makes the scale almost smaller than HO scale miniature of Adventureland or of Fantasyland or of Main Street.
Yeah.
And they've been doing it for decades, and you can buy them for, you know, $50-$60, and they go out, they sell out, and eventually like you literally piece them together to build out your scale model of Disneyland. And I think the company is like the Olszewski or something like that, but it's actually one guy, it's one artist. He's like 74 years old. He's been doing it forever, and he got the contract, and he makes everything out of, you know, foam core and small, and he prototypes everything by hand and then sends it off to Disney, and then they turn into a product, and he was there with his prototypes just hang out. And I didn't even realize that's like a real person. I thought it was
a company.
Yeah.
How thrilling.
And he just works out of Ventura and has been doing it. He never goes to conventions, and he was just at this one.
I'd love to see that whole process, because I'm sure it's a very different process than 3D printing and sending it off to a contract manufacturer.
Mm-hmm. And it's all, you can tell in the work, it's all hand done.
That's super
and then
cool.
They find a way to then manufacture that.
That's amazing.
I think that was my highlight. Yeah.
Zach, where have you been recently?
Oh, man, where have I been? Lake Tahoe, I've been Chicago, all over the place. Nothing as cool as you. I don't get invited to movie sets or... it's funny. This is a busy time of year and also a slow time of year. So I get to work on some of my shop stuff. And mostly it's like, this is the time... I don't get spring cleaning because that's when I'm really busy. It's mostly winter cleaning. So I've been going through old stuff and trying to get my shop in a little bit more of an order. But
For people who don't know, Zach's shop, you run a company called Build Cool Stuff.
Build Cool Stuff.
And... you not only do fun projects for yourself, but also like companies contract you out to figure out the tough problems.
Yeah. So I do professional prototyping. So
it's like,
you know,
Leon, the cleaner of prototyping.
A little bit.
Like to
think. Yeah. I get weird requests. Well, like laser tag for World War I airplanes, but
a quartermaster for hire.
Yeah, kind of. Right. I do electronics and mechanical stuff. And I think the thing that's kind of unique about my shop is I can combine the two really quickly. And so, you know, if people want a works-like or looks-like prototype or like a one-off build, I do just like people want a weird object, you know, much like what you do on a one-day build.
Yeah.
If somebody else wants that but doesn't have the skills or a big shop to do it, I've got that. And I've got I have an excuse to buy big tools, you know, the CNC routers and, you know, machine tools and stuff and lasers and stuff. So I really love that. That's what makes me happy. So
it's lovely to have a Swiss Army knife at your disposal.
Absolutely. And every extra blade in my Swiss Army knife, I get new skills and new, you know, design techniques. As we were talking a little bit before the show, like that totally just adds to your, you know, arsenal of, you know, what, how you think about design and all of those sorts of things.
Well, I've talked about this on the podcast before, but one of my first really important building trainings was building paper models of famous landscapes in this series called The World at Your Feet. Which is a set of architectural models of all these world landmarks, the Taj Mahal, the Chrysler Building, the Brooklyn Bridge, all out of paper where it wasn't die cut or embossed. You literally had to cut and score everything yourself.
This is pre-Pepicura.
Exactly. But it taught my brain how to think in terms of turning simple curves into compound curves with, you know, parabolas and
2D
things like that.
2D to 3D.
And when I finally learned how to use the laser cutter, when I saw the laser cutter at Industrial Light and Magic in 1998, I was like, oh, this plugs perfectly into that part of my brain.
Right.
And it was such a thrilling expansion of what was possible.
And that's a nice thing about some of these things. It's like, you know, it's an incremental step. Like that's, you know, you went from a razor blade to a laser cutter and that your brain goes, oh, I can just kind of make that leap. Right. And then you kind of just go, oh, well, if I do that, then if I do tabs, and you really think about things differently and how to put them together.
There is a funny thing that you get to learn with the laser cutter, which is that the thickness of plexiglass is totally arbitrary.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and the problem is most companies sell, you know, quarter inch plexiglass. And it's like, oh, no, it's 023 or, you know, 0.23.
Anywhere from 0.23 to 0.26.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and especially when you get to like the skinny, the 16th inch black plex, which is seriously one of the most important ones at ILM, where you had to have light blocking ability.
Right.
That is anywhere, it should be 0.62.
Yep.
It's anywhere from like 0.4 to 0.8.
Yep. You just oversize all your holes and you fill it full of glue and it works.
Well, it bears directly on one of my goals when I was laser cutting was, I wanted to get the whole thing in the first pass.
Mm.
So you want a tab and slot so the whole thing engineers and does half, three quarters of your work for you. And the goal is like, how thick is the plex that I'm cutting out over here versus how thick is that piece over there?
And it all matters if it's cast or, you know, all the different flavors of,
yeah,
of acrylic.
Yeah.
It's the extruded that sands much better because it doesn't melt as fast.
Right. And the cast smells worse.
When does
you,
it really?
When you cut it. Yeah. No, there's a weird difference in smell. So, yeah, there's all these weird things when you actually do it enough and you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, all of those fun things that you learn. And but, oh, yeah. And then, again, you think about these processes so different. And then you go, oh, well, you get used to, you know, laser cutter. And then, I want to do something bigger than my bed, which is only, you know, 12 by 24. So you get a big, you know, CNC router. Then all of the stuff that you kind of got familiar with is all out the window. Now you have a kerf that's, you know, big.
And
you can't do tight corners anymore. So you have to do dog bones. And, again, you think about all these different things. And then you're looking around at, like, oh, when you go, you know, buy a piece of furniture at IKEA or
that's
wherever.
Everything is made.
It's how everything is made. And you go, oh, that's why these weird little slots and those little attachment points. And yeah, no, it's
the
really
depth of corners.
The depth of corners. Exactly. Exactly.
It's like seeing through the matrix of manufacturing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
When do we get the desktop EDM?
Oh, EDM's a fun one.
EDM's so beautiful.
It really is. For people that don't know, EDM, electric discharge machining, it's basically a piece of wire. It's sort of this weird mix of plasma cutting, but without plasma and air.
And so, the wire is can be surpassingly thin.
Oh, absolutely. And it's so basically what you're doing is you're passing electricity through a wire, and you're very, very slowly moving it through material. And, you know, anybody that's ever seen, like, you know, a spark that's, you know.
So is it the arc that cuts it?
Well, yeah. So, what's happening is it's at a very, very small level. You're running a wire through the piece of material through the material. Yeah. So it's actually moving. Well, I think the wire doesn't typically. Sometimes the wire moves. Sometimes the material moves. It's a combination depending on the EDM. But basically, it's a really, really precise way because it's cutting so slow and almost at the microscopic level. And it really eats away at the material super, super slowly and lots of little tiny arcs between the wire and the material. And you can cut just so precise. And then they get really complex curves by moving the top and the bottom of the wire. You can do chamfers and you can do compound
curves. That's an
axis
that you don't think about.
Right. You can't do that with most laser cutters don't have that. It's just straight through.
Yeah. This is one of the key ways they do hardened steel tooling for manufacturing is using EDM.
And then there's also the sink, you know, EDM sinking. That's how they do like the molds for the final pass of molds for injection molding. So you can't machine really, really deep, really, really hard materials. So they make a special electrode that is the shape, the sort of the negative space, and they slowly plunge it into the machine.
Really? Yeah. That's how they do that.
And then they get this just beautiful finish. And that's how they get these like really complex shapes and these really tight corners using the, you know, EDM.
Amazing.
Have you had any experience with injection molding?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
That's a world that eludes me completely. Like that, it's always easier. It's very expensive. It's like tens of thousands of dollars.
Well, I mean, it depends. There's always different levels. You can do aluminum. You could do it. So it's all how many you want to make. It's how long the tool lasts.
How complex the tool is. How thick the part you're going to shoot in it. But you could start out with injection molding with a tool that costs you less than like $3,000
to
make a small part repeatedly. There was a guy in the East Bay that Industrial Light and Magic used to buy from. He made tiny little gusseted bolt plates out of styrene that he injection molded. He made the tools himself. He injection molded them himself. And we bought them by the metric ton at ILM as detailing on the sides of ships and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's people that are actually doing injection molding out of 3D printed material. So, you know, if you only want like, you know, 10
don't care about the longevity of it.
You don't care about longevity or how it degrades or how precise it is. Yep. You know, you can do those sorts of things. And, you know, there's high temperature plastics that you can actually do lower temperature metals and you know, just barely get in there. but yeah, I mean, it's the hard part is when you want 10,000 of something or 100,000 of something or a million of something, and they have to be absolutely perfect, you know, getting a mold that doesn't degrade over time and all of those sorts of things, or complexity, you know, there's all these different things about, you know, gates and inner, you know, cuts and over.
Moving parts.
Yeah,
oh my God.
So it can get really, really
complex.
And
is it factory specific? Like every factory does it their own way, and that's why you have to buy it from them. So no, they do the
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the machines production. That they have. So, you know, there's the machines, you know, if it's just a single pass where it's, you know, two plates that come together and you squirt plastic in it, you know, that's one thing. But most of the time there's extra bits and pieces that move in and out to give you those complex features, like, you know, the over center kind of latches, or, you know, living hinges and all these different things.
So. I worked for a company called Zoob, which has ball and socket joints. You remember that toy?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Okay, so
was that Arthur Ganson that was he the
He was one of the consultants on it.
Yeah.
I love Arthur. I met him in the early 90s at a machine art show at the University of Chicago. He was one of the early consultants on that. It was Michael Joaquin Gray invented it. And one of the primary, it was ball and socket joints. Mm-hmm. But the ball had a geodesic arrangement of detents in it. Mm-hmm. And the tooling, apparently, when they had that run in the mid-90s,
was
like
super hard.
Computers had only allowed that tool to be possible like 2 or 3 years earlier.
Sure, because every little detent is an undercut.
Every single detent. So
and the detent's allowed to lock, the joints to lock in place?
So just the ball was something like a 6-piece collet on either side release the ball on this tool that could do 16 parts. The tooling alone was over $1 million. And at one point, one of the injection molders was holding the tooling hostage, and like a private jet was chartered to fly to the injection molder and take the tooling.
Because once you build it, like you can't really modify it. I mean, there's some tricks that they sometimes will add a little metal, or they can take some metal away. But for the most part, it's like you do it once, and it's a long process again with that, like, you know, sinking EDM.
Well, it's
EDM
like
and
it's like plates for money.
Right.
Yeah. No,
it's
it is
exactly that. And it's something that weighs like 150 pounds, and it's $1 million worth of effort.
Oh my God. That's a cool story right there. Like, that's a ripe
there
for
was a mid
dramatization.
Legendarily within the company, there was like a midnight I can say all this because the company imploded. that tool is probably
somebody's doorstop right
Zoob
now.
Zoob is still being made. I occasionally see them showing up. Trendmasters bought those tools. They made a 3/4 size Zoob that was abysmal. They tried to put character heads on it, which is a terrible idea. But anyway, yeah, there was this famous story about a midnight private jet flight to Salt Lake City to like, God, give us these tools, you know, like
a hostage exchange.
Yeah, exactly.
This is like, it reminds me of like the crazy Yosemite mountain climber story where, like, you know, Yosemite, there's a whole culture of people who scale the mountains, and Free Solo is like the apex of that. But, you know, decades ago, there was a famous cocaine trafficking airplane that crashed in Yosemite, and it was the climbers who found it first. And that story became cliffhanger.
Oh my God, I totally had
really?
No idea.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
They climbed down much faster.
Yeah, yes.
There is actually a fun video on YouTube of Alex Honnold walking through famous climbing movie scenes.
Oh, that's great.
And what he loves about them. And he's very, very, he's very gracious in his assessment of both Tom Cruise's and Sylvester Stallone's rock climbing abilities.
Yeah, I want to see the cliffhanger version of the tooling heist story. Master mold. Yeah, and that goes back to DesignerCon, because these are what the people I talk to have to contend with also on their day-to-day basis, like the cost, doing the cost-benefit analysis of how much they want to spend, which factories to work with, the you know, how much back and forth. That's all modern toy design.
Yeah.
I deal with that all the time because people, you know, people want to say, oh, how much is it going to cost to build a thing? And I go, well, it depends. Are you going to build 2 or 2,000 or 2 million?
Well, that's my friend Kevin Binkert has SMP here in the city, and he has people call him up and say, hey, ballpark, what does it cost to machine something? He's like, that's not a question.
Yeah.
That's not, there's no actual question like, in the sentence you spoke.
How much does it cost to write something?
Right.
Write a song.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we continue on with this week's conversation, I want to let you know that Still Entitled This Week is made possible with support from Netgear. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? Does it buffer while streaming? Does connecting to new devices slow it down? Can it handle gaming, video calls, large file transfers all at once? It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is if your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated. With Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all of your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering, eliminate lag while gaming, and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. And if you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never have to worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. Once again, that's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. Now back to the conversation.
So I will say that I've been doing lots of television lately and keeping current with The Morning Show, which is still uneven but really fun. The Mandalorian, you guys haven't seen the third episode.
Trying to catch up.
I was traveling.
Really good.
Yeah.
The director of that, I think her name is Deborah Chow. She's been tapped because of her work on The Mandalorian to direct and I think maybe even showrun the Obi-Wan prequel series.
Ooh.
So they announced that Ewan McGregor was going to come back for a limited series, and people are wondering what her work was, and Mandalorian episode 3 is like, that's what sold Kathleen Kennedy on her running that show.
Dude, nice. The episode 3 is fantastic. Also, Watchmen remains phenomenal.
I got back from Designer Con at like 12:30 a.m. last night, and I still had to stay up to watch the latest episode 6 of Watchmen. That should win all the Emmys.
There are levels of cultural intersection of talking about important issues that television can do in a way that is way deeper than films can do, mm-hmm. because you can carry things across long arcs like Breaking Bad.
And the time scale is much shorter from production to actually showing it.
Exactly.
And there's a time scale for people enjoying the content. It's much longer rather than the first opening weekend being the most important thing. DVR, binging, Netflix.
Especially now. Yeah.
And as we talked about with some of the folks on The Expanse when we were there, science fiction provides this really great wedge in the door of people's cultural mindset.
So long ago.
Star Trek is the original, the OG. Battlestar Galactica's reboot is some of the most important social commentary that's ever been filmed.
There's a lot in terms
of class warfare and what it is to be a person, othering. What Watchmen is doing feels on a new level, especially with choosing as its temporal center, the Tulsa race massacre in the 20s, and performances like every performance down the line is incredible.
Right.
Super exciting. I also have another show to recommend.
Oh yeah.
Which is, Olive Kitteridge.
Oh,
this is a 4-part series. They are 4 films. Two of the executive producers are 2 of my favorite female filmmakers, Mimi Leder and Lisa Cholodenko. Lisa Cholodenko did The Kids Are All Right and Laurel Canyon, both with Frances McDormand. Frances McDormand is the star of the show, and like she always is, she's mind-blowingly great. She plays a super difficult to deal with, brilliant, awesome human being. Like, I love her, but she can be awful to people.
She's determined.
She is like, she's kind of like Aspie. She's going to say what she thinks. She has a super quick moral center. She reads people instantaneously.
In 3 Billboards.
Yeah, a little bit like that. Like, I mean, look, Frances McDormand is kind of plays that character a lot. This is a sort of a wonderful example of that. But I was talking about the casting in Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
The casting in Olive Kitteridge is incredible because the stories bounce around in time.
Mm-hmm.
So between episodes 1, 2, and 3, we've traversed like 15 years of time. So there's a kid we meet at 16 or... There's a kid we meet at 12 or 11, and then we meet him again at 20.
Oh, wow.
And the casting of the kid and the adult is like, you guys are geniuses. It's like uncanny how well. And both of them are well-known actors. Like, you've seen them in other things. The kid is, I think, the same kid that plays Louis C.K. as a kid in Louis. Mm.
Oh, wow.
During the whole Jeremy Renner pot-dealing episode arc. And the adult, I can't remember. I've seen him in other stuff before. But the casting in Olive Kitteridge is fantastic, and the performances are really great.
Nice. What service is it on?
HBO.
HBO.
Yeah. I know. So I've spent all week making sure that I had all of my services signed up on the Samsung that I got.
Yep.
And then because I'm an empty nester, my kids have left the house. I did the secondary clean this weekend. After Thing 2 went off to college a few months ago, I cleaned Thing 1's room, even down to like buying a Bissell water cleaner and getting rid of some of those stains in the carpet. Teenage boys, man. And then I did the other half of that this weekend, and I bought a second Samsung flat screen, a smaller one, you know, like $500.
Yep.
But all the same remote access. And to be honest, when my house was renovated before I bought it, it was renovated a couple years before I bought it. So I got to see the bill that it cost them to put in this Cat 5 fully wired multimedia system.
Which is now out of date because you don't use it.
They spent $20,000 on this.
Right. Oh my God.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Then I had to try and make that work. And they had all those custom remotes that are like $350 a piece.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that system was a nightmare, and it never worked. As I'm sure you know, it's really hard to make those systems work.
There's consultants that make a lot of money making those remotes work.
Now, I was very gratified halfway through this process because I also had to spend a lot of money getting the system up and running, and it never quite worked. And some of that was my fault. I don't want to pay out the guy we hired to do it because it wasn't his fault. It's just I was very satisfied to learn that Bill Gates, whose house famously gives guests fobs so that music follows them around, apparently never works.
Yeah.
Apparently there's like two guys full time just to keep that system
going.
In
theory, it sounds good, but
people on the walls pulling the doors open, right? Like
but
Star
now
Trek.
You buy a television and as long as it's got internet, that shit just works on each TV.
Yeah.
That's it.
And so I'm getting, for $400, I'm getting this thing that would have cost me $10,000 10 years ago.
And it would work.
And it wouldn't, so it's very funny to go. I no longer need Cat 5 between all the televisions.
It's
in the house.
It's
none
of
that's necessary.
Why get in the way of you paying money for the content?
Exactly.
Well, the technology's finally caught up, and we've iterated enough to get out all those bugs.
Yeah.
So
I also really appreciate. We can talk about the fact that I got that Samsung.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. I also, you already have.
Well, it's the big 8K 65 inch. It's one of the loveliest things I've ever seen. And the two things I love about it are, one, it's 3/4 inch
thick.
Amazing. Which blew my mind. But second, they didn't put an electrical cord in it. It's one little silver cord that's like 40 feet long and goes to a box way over there.
Yeah.
So I didn't even have to route anything custom in the wall for it. It's just this tiny little silver cord and it's
nice
done.
Industrial design.
Oh God. It's so nice when things work the way they're supposed to.
It is. It is. Absolutely.
There is Black Friday coming up and Thanksgiving. And it's the holidays. Are you guys doing shopping for yourself or are things that you've eyed this year, things that you're going to look forward to getting for people?
Ah, that is a really good question. I haven't even engaged with Christmas yet.
Well, when I come here, it's like, oh no, I want to buy one of those. We were just talking about sewing machines. I think I have a list now.
Yeah. There's definitely some tools I'd like to get before the end of the fiscal year.
Yes, exactly. For tax purposes.
For tax purposes, my accountant said I have to buy at least a certain number of. We're having one of those San Francisco orphan dinners where just like whoever's left around, we're having over. I think we're cooking chicken instead of turkey.
Nice.
Just generally
mix it
better.
Up. Yeah. Less tendons and things.
It really is. What are you hosting Thanksgiving?
No,
your house?
I'm getting on an airplane in 12 hours.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
with the baby. So
wow. Yeah. Good luck.
I know.
Yeah, doing potluck. So that's nice. Just kind of you know, going over to friends and make it easy.
I don't miss flying with infants.
Oh. Oh yes, Norm.
Sometimes you don't have a choice.
No, of course not. And I actually
they're harder to ship.
I flew with 11-month-old twins alone.
Wow.
At one point.
Well, there's a stage when it's easy, when you can just kind of like you know
when they sleep anywhere
or they're eating like the whole time or sleeping, like then it's easy. And then there's this period where they want to move, and you're probably at that period. So
very wiggly.
Yeah, bring some entertaining things.
There's also there's a period where red eyes work for them. And then there's a period where red eyes stop working for them. And
we're going to find
out.
No
one tells you when that transition is. I did both. And the second one was like, this is a living hell on earth. We didn't get any sleep, and neither did anyone on that plane.
I wonder why the airlines haven't figured out, like, you know, there should be a drop down box to say, like, I have an infant. Here's how old they are. And then, like, section them off or some algorithm to feel like, you know,
people would game it.
I totally agree with you. And I see that thread on Twitter all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because parents want that too.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You feel bad. I was like, I don't want my kid, you know, disturbing everybody.
No.
So, yeah.
Especially on a red eye.
Yeah, but they would totally game the system.
I was going to apologize to everyone on the flight coming up.
Well, yeah, bring some like extra snacks for people around and be like, you know what? You know, thank you for putting up with my,
here's a cookie.
Yeah, and some earplugs.
Yeah.
That's nice move.
Well, good luck to everyone traveling this holiday.
I will say that the holiday travel seems to have started early because San Francisco was empty this weekend.
Mm.
Last night at Delfina Pizza, there was like four people in the joint, and I've never seen it less than with a waiting list. And
nice.
I live around the corner. We eat there like twice a week.
That and Burning Man, you know.
Yes, that's two my two favorite weekends in San Francisco.
To go out.
So I plan to drive all over San Francisco this week just to kind of get it out of my
traffic
system.
This morning was quite light, so that was very nice. Oh,
nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we promise when Will gets back, we'll do our podcast episode picking our favorite things for people to do in San Francisco, because we know people are coming to San Francisco for the holidays. You know, Hamilton's playing. There's a Harry Potter
play
that's playing.
You can actually get tickets now for Hamilton
relatively easily.
I'm going to see it later in December for the fourth time.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Well worth it.
Very rewatchable.
Yeah, it really is. And if you're – just one thing. If you're thinking about going to Hamilton, I will tell you – I think your experience will be vastly improved if you listen to the libretto and really get to know it before you see the musical.
It is. I actually had issue hearing some of the lyrics, you know, during the show.
Mm-hmm.
I actually didn't pre-listen. I've now listened to it a ton after I've seen it. But like, I wasn't so aware of like every single song. So it was kind of like, wait, what were they saying? So yeah, that would totally make a big difference.
I did this for Ryan Kaiser, our production manager. Before he went and saw it, I sat him down and did the same lead in I did with my wife, which was I played them Angelica and Eliza's songs from the first act, which are a great depth. It's a great way of deepening someone's experience. If you can't teach them the whole libretto, because I mean, who's got time to do that? You can walk them through a couple of songs and help them understand the emotional arcs.
Well, and the depth, like there's so much to every single song. And it's like, once you kind of get, there's a lot going on, and I actually need to listen to it at that level, as opposed to, this is a catchy tune.
Right. Yeah, and that Angelica Eliza thing is one of those ones that is actually maybe the least historically accurate in terms of the timelines. Mm. Of Hamilton's life, but the most important for understanding the arc of the character and his life.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, nice. Hamilton. Now I'm going to put it on. We're done with this. I'm putting it on.
Zach, anything you want to talk about and promote? Anything projects that you're working on?
People can find you. Most of my stuff is all secret. So, you know, it's pre-production prototyping. But, but you can always find me at buildcoolstuff.com. And, you know, I'm on Twitter. It's funny. Every time I do a podcast, my Twitter count goes up by, you know, 4 or 5, which is, you know, huge for me.
We're going to see more of Zach in the future on Tested. Mm-hmm. We're going to be playing together.
I'm excited.
Me too, man. Me too. I'm so psyched.
Good stuff. Yeah, terrible to our listeners right now.
No. This is just it's
a tease.
Laying it in, a little bit of a tease.
Yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. The videos from DesignerCon coming up on the site soon, as well as a few one-day builds we've shot already. So everyone, enjoy those and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
If you're celebrating that. And we'll see you all next week. Thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you for having me. This
all right.
Fun.
Bye, guys.
Bye.